we're here to talk to you this afternoon about stepping up and see how. And I was going to introduce each of them because, believe it or not, as the speaker, panelist, chairperson, you would think it would be an easy assignment to do, but it's not. Finding people that are willing to sit up here and speak to you from their heart is quite a task in our fellowship. But I wanted to introduce them properly, but I got mixed up with all the panelists. So my sponsor always says to me, no one can tell your story. Only you can tell your story. So they're going to briefly qualify, and then each person is going to share for 10 minutes, and then we're going to open it up for questions. Okay?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Irish, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Irish.
I came into CHOW in 2002, and my abstinence date is now August 25th, 2013. I am maintaining a 70-pound weight loss and sponsor on all levels. And I am so grateful for this program and how it has made me step up to life. Our topic is stepping up and see how, and some of the things that I have learned through that. And when I first came into program, I live in a very small rural Texas town, Glen Rose, Texas. Yeah. No one knows. And we have one traffic light. I am 2 hours from my nearest face-to-face meeting, which is in Dallas. And so there are some challenges with that. And I am so grateful for the meetings. And for when I came into CHOW, there were no phone bridge meetings. They did not exist. So I connected just on the phone with people for my first year. And I did not get to my first face-to-face meeting for a year. I had gotten stepped up in CHOW and introduced to it out in Las Vegas, got my sponsor, went to the store, got my oat bran, and went back to Glen Rose, Texas, because Glen Rose, Texas did not have oat bran either. And started working the program. And the stepping up that was really important to me, and still remains that way, is going through the steps and going through the different levels of sponsorship. And I believe that is just so important, and it's so important for me to make sure that I pass that on to my sponsees and help them work through the different stages of sponsorship so they are not 3, 4, 5 years in program and still remain a food sponsor. Help them get through that fourth step inventory, one question at a time. One thing that helped me when it was time to do my inventory was that the day I started it, I made a date with my sponsor for when we would complete my fifth step. And we actually set a date, and I put it in my calendar. And I'm a very cross-it-off-the-list person, so if it got onto a calendar, I was going to try to do that my best, and I did. I was able to complete my fifth step on the day that I had committed that I would do that. And that helped me get through the fear or the anxiety or the whatever of doing those inventory questions. So I had to work through the different levels of sponsorship, and I did that during the first year via the phone and through my sponsor in Las Vegas, and had completed that. And at my first live CHOW meeting, I was able to stand up and qualify on all levels of sponsorship at my first meeting. So that was a little different. And I'm so thankful one of our further panelists down the road helped me get to that first meeting. And I think it's so important to give service on so many levels. We had known each other for years, and she helped me find the meeting in Dallas. She made an arrangement. Another CHOW member met me on the outskirts of Dallas at a gas station and led me to the meeting. And she even was not aware if I had money for the tollway, so she took this whole route around so that I would not get left stuck not being able to get to the meeting because I couldn't pay the toll. And that's service. That's sponsorship. I think it's very important to step up to service, and I've grown through that. As I said, there were no phone bridge meetings when I first started. They came into being, and the first phone bridge meeting was the Promises meeting, which still exists. And I still remember how scared I was at that meeting to speak up because I was afraid of the technology and would something break, would something, you know, do something strange. But people encouraged me and said, just read from the format, just do a reading, do whatever. And when the meetings first started, they were so small that everybody could totally qualify and go. And now they've grown. I think there's 58 meetings a week now, and plus all the Spanish-speaking ones. So I've grown through the different levels of service as well. And I think it's very important for me to nurture that in the people I sponsor, help them, encourage them, you know, show them how to lead a meeting, encourage them to serve on intergroup, encourage them to come to the global convention or come to different things and grow and experience. One of the challenges I will now be facing is I'm going to have to step up my program in another way. For many years now, I have served at the World Service level. I have been doing this, I do not know how many years, but it's been several years that I've been doing that. And to me, that's not anything that's a testimony to me. That's a testimony to how this program works. That someone who lives in a small town with one traffic light can grow and come to California each year and give service. We don't have to, I don't know, have lots of experience in many ways. People will be here to hold out their hands to you and help you to grow and support you and help get you going. I just had to step down from that service. My husband is 17 years older than I am and is having many, many health challenges. And because of his health challenges, I'm no longer going to be able to travel. So I'm going to have to step up. Right now I'm able to get to my meeting in Dallas once a month. That's been a challenge lately because I had my knee replaced in May. This is my first big outing with new knee, and it's going pretty good. But I'm going to have to try to get over there more often or find other ways to serve. I'm going to have to step up my outreach calls. Yes, I have to make 3 calls a day, and for me it's very important to make 3 live calls a day. I leave many, many, many messages on answering machines. You know, but to me, okay, I've left a message on the answering machine, but I've got to keep going until I reach 3 live people. It doesn't say stop at 3 outreach calls. I can do more. And it doesn't say anything about when you're sitting at a global convention surrounded by hundreds of people and see how I don't have to make my outreach calls. So I've made my outreach calls today and reached out because I'm trying to encourage other people to come here and see the recovery for themselves, see the hope and strength that is in here. So stepping up to me means many, many things. So I'm going to be challenged to find other ways to step up my program because I'm a firm believer that I have to keep things moving in my program. I cannot take this program for granted. I have to be vigilant. And I'm either going to be green and growing or ripe and rotting. And I do not want to be ripe and rotting. I want to keep growing. So I've got to find new things to keep growing with in this program. And because of See How and How It Is, there are avenues to do that. I was at a wonderful workshop this morning of See How Comes to Age talking about the unity and connecting face-to-face meetings and the phone bridge meetings and trying to strengthen each other and to grow our program. I need every single one of you here. And it's going to be very difficult not seeing your faces each year. But you're with me. And I know I am never alone because I'm trying to step up and see how, and so are you. Thank you.
I'm Jill T. from Oklahoma.
Hi, Jill.
I'm a compulsive eater. Surprises you, huh? I came to see how October 18th, 2006. I have maintained a 55-pound weight release, and I'm a full-service sponsor. See how changed my life. And Irish was on one of the first phone bridge meetings I went to. I was sitting on a mountainside and had learned about See How through a telephone call. Immediately got on a phone bridge meeting because there were no face-to-face meetings. And that's how I lived the first year of program. But I have an activity for you. Please stand up. Turn to a person next to you and offer them a simple smile and welcome. Okay, that is so wonderful to see you all loving each other. To me, you just showed how we step up and see how. You just did it. It's as simple as that. Every action we take, every thought that goes through our mind as we walk by someone and think loving thoughts towards them, every word, every thought, every word we write down, not just say, is stepping up and see how. Because service begins with the service to ourselves, and then it goes out to others. So, congratulations, you just stepped up and see how. I remember the first time I stepped up and see how. It was the day I asked my sister on a telephone call to tell me why and how she was losing weight. Before that, I had seen her a few times and I had simply said, "Could you give me a tip? I'm doing this. And I've lost this." And she would evade my questions. How dare her evade my questions? And so what happened was I finally got to a point of such desperation that I called her. And I said, "Please tell me what you're doing." And she said, "This is not a diet that I'm doing. I've joined a spiritual program, and this spiritual program is my release from compulsive eating." And she went on to tell me about the beginning of See How. But that was my first step, because what is that step? I was beginning to admit that I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. Would I have made that call if I hadn't just started to admit that? It may not have been full, but I had started to admit that, and that took me months. Okay, I stepped up for myself and I asked for help. We can't do this alone. So I stepped up for me and I asked for help. And the first step ups I did were for me. The big book says our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. So that's what has come true in my life. Happy and purposeful life. It's not perfect. I don't do everything perfect, but it is happy and it's purposeful. It also says on page 24 of the 12 and 12, we stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. Well, that's where I got to next, because the next thing my sister started telling me was the details of the program. And she told me about the sugar and flour restriction. And I was appalled. Truly, I had never heard of anything so outlandish in my life. This was 2006. It was before all the new sugar stuff came out and people were talking about this. This was unheard of to me. And I'm in healthcare and had heard of every diet in the world. This was unheard of. And I actually asked her, is this a cult? And she started telling me about the 12 steps and the spiritual process that she had gone through. So she then stepped up also, didn't she? So I gave her, by that phone call, the opportunity to step up and 12-step me. So as we went forward that day, it all happened that day. She didn't get off the phone. She didn't rush me. She took every second I needed and more. But I said to her, after she told me it was a spiritual program, that I always knew. Since I was a teenager and started battling food, I knew I couldn't do it myself. And I thought, there has to be a spiritual answer, because this is beyond any person here to help me, and it's beyond my control. But I had gotten away from that. I had tried every diet thinking that I could do it. So anyway, at that point, by saying that I thought it had always been spiritual that I needed, I was taking the second step. I was stepping up again in Seahaw, into that second step. I was realizing that there was a higher power who wanted to restore me to sanity. And yet I fell into that group that is talked about in step two. And it says, still others who do believe in God exists, believe God exists, have no faith whatever, he will perform this miracle in my life. Yeah, I knew God existed, but I still at that very moment didn't know that. So I went on to step up to believe that because it was working for my sister and others, that it could work for me. And I went on to step three, starting my surrender. And then I got on the phone bridge, surrendering more. I found a sponsor. She stepped up to sponsor me. And I stepped up into the next total surrender. And here I am today. And my life is pervaded by Seahaw. I don't know, you know, you have all these cells, and I don't think there can be a cell that's not, you know, connected to my other cells and to your cells and to service and stepping up in this program. I used to think service was really cruddy stuff. Never wanted to do it. Please, if you were coming at me and I knew you were going to ask me to do something, I'd run away. But here I've learned that service is acceptance. Service is joining in with others. Service is no longer Jill doing it right or Jill doing it at all. It's all about just stepping up, saying I'll do the next right thing and asking for my higher power and others to help me. And I want to share to end with the greatest example I have of this and this just came in about a week ago. I was on a committee or in a position of service that I needed to send documents to WSO. And instead of sending them snail mail, I was sending them email. And I was also late with a document. So I said to this person I was communicating with, "Thanks for your patience. I will do this next year." Then I put a smiley face and I put, "God willing and the creeks don't rise, comma, LOL," because I still don't trust myself even next year that I'll get it all done right. So that's my own growth. And this was the response. "Jill, no patience required, only appreciation for what you do. With our tradition of rotation of service, there's always a learning curve, because if we're working our program, we're always stepping into something new. The circle of life is in recovery." Doesn't that blow you away? And with that, I'll end. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. My name's Rowdy. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm alive today, and you all are as well. So let's celebrate and have some fun. You know what I'm talking about? Come on. I am a compulsive eater. I like to say I'm one of those skinny bitches I resented my whole life. I was in 12-step recovery for 17 years, and every time I wrote an inventory, skinny men were on that inventory until I found you. I have been allowed to, I got abstinent January 12th, 09. I've been allowed continuous abstinence since that date, which is a great gift. I've surrendered, been allowed to maintain over 65 pounds, and my higher power has also helped me to have to gain weight as a recovering anorexic in this program. So what a great topic, stepping up, and I don't like notes. If you were in the other panel I was on, these are the same notes. I'm just going to mix them up a little. Just kidding. These are new notes. So the first thing I thought of was stepping up as far as our demonstration of willingness. Okay, so the program found me. I was 12-stepped into this program, and the words that were used were, "Why are you doing this alone?" I'd been in 12-step recovery, you know, in our father program for 17 years. And another member said, "Why are you doing this alone?" You know, they knew how sick I was. I was dying from this disease. And I kept trying to turn it over, but I didn't believe God could help me. I had given up hope that God could help with this disease. "Why are you doing this alone? We don't have to do it alone." But abstinence is a gift, but we have to do our part. You know, being introduced to CEA was a gift, but I don't know about you, my higher power does not magically beam me up like Scotty to a meeting, okay? My higher power does not levitate my food onto a scale. My higher power does not fill my shopping cart with labels that have been carefully read, okay? I have to do the footwork and demonstrate my willingness. I have to step up. From the beginning, when I got into CEA, I had to step up and start doing the work that was asked of me and demonstrate that willingness. And I only had this little kernel of faith that maybe this might work for me. But all of you helped by coming to these meetings, and seeing you and hearing you helped that faith grow. But we have to step up, and we have to demonstrate willingness. In a letter Bill wrote, he says, "As active alcoholics, we lost our ability to choose whether we would drink. We were the victims of a compulsion which seemed to decree we must go on with our own destruction. Yet we finally did make choices that brought about our recovery. We came to believe that alone we were powerless over alcohol. This was surely a choice, a most difficult one. We came to believe that a higher power could restore us to sanity. We became willing to practice AA's 12 steps. In short, we chose to become willing, and no better choice did we ever make. So, you know, willing, the gift of abstinence, I see, the word pride is a bad word in 12-step recovery, but that's false pride. You know, I'm proud of the work that I've done to maintain my abstinence. You know, the way I remain humble about it is I know that it's only grace that I was even given the chance to come in and get the work introduced to me. That's the grace. So I'm grateful for my higher power allowing me to step up and do the work that I need to do. The next thing I thought of was then we need to step up and continue to do the work, you know, and to practice this program as diligently and to the best of our ability as we can every single day. Alcohol, it says in our literature, is a cunning foe. It is amazing to me what the disease whispers. If you step back on a medical level and look at it clinically, it is fascinating. It is continually morphing and changing what it whispers in our ears to get us to feed it. It's telling us life is good, celebrate. It's telling us life is so bad, escape. It's telling us I can get another chance, I'll eat once and come back. It's telling us anything and everything it can, constantly whispering. And you know what? Years later, the whispering hasn't stopped. The disease is still there. I've just been granted an ability by working the steps and with God's grace to not have that whispering be so loud anymore and have to pay attention to it, thank God. You know? So I have to continue to diligently work this program and our 7 tools every day. I cannot take my abstinence for granted because the disease is still present and alive in me. And in my belief, it always will be. And my hope is that I stay here for life. That is my hope. The Big Book also tells me the disease will kill me. AA Comes of Age says, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Those are pretty strong words. Drunkenness, and I love this word, disintegration, are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are the results of personal disobedience to spiritual principles. We must obey certain principles or we die. Now, I hit a pretty low bottom to the point of realizing I was going to die a compulsive eater, and I had accepted that's how I was going out. And I have to, though, work with people and work with myself on that first step. Do I really believe this disease will kill me? You know, do I believe, you know, that if I do not obey certain spiritual principles, I can die? Or to believe I can go back out and eat a little bit and come back in, you know, what is it? You know, it's not a big deal. No, we, sitting in meetings, what we get to see are people who keep coming back. So the disease is like, look, they came back, I can come back. There's no guarantee that you get, some people get 50 chances, some people get one. You know, I don't want to take for granted and go back out that I might get another chance of this miracle that I've been given. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was stepping up, as mentioned, in service. I love the process that's already been spoken about of myself with the help of a beautiful, wonderful, very strict sponsor, stepping up to the various levels of sponsorship by doing the work that was asked of me. I love stepping up my sponsees as they do the work that I've asked of them. That it's just like that third step ceremony, I cry, and I don't cry, but I get tears in my eyes when I do that third step ceremony with somebody. It is so beautiful. many people in our world, in my belief, search their whole lives for the purpose of life. What's the meaning of life? You know, what's my purpose here on earth? I personally, and this is just speaking for myself, was granted a purpose, not because I'm awesome, wonderful, intelligent, whatever, but because I was a pathetic, sick addict who was actively killing himself on a daily basis. But through that, I was granted the gift of having a purpose, and that purpose is to save lives, to carry the message. This, we are in the business, people, of saving lives. That's what you're doing just by sitting in this chair and showing that it can be done. You are helping save lives. What greater purpose could there be, you know, for this worthless, pathetic guy eating himself today at death in his bed in the middle of the night with food wrappers all around him, you know? So I am grateful to be of service. I love my sponsor, my sponsees. Last thing I'll read, and I have served above the meeting level on the area level, was asked to move into world, but my sponsor asked, and we agreed that I needed to finish school because I have two jobs and go to school before I could move into world services. But I won't speak. It's already been spoke on actually participating in the service structure of CEA Howe and stepping up on that level. But I just want to read you Dr. Bob's reasons for being of service. If you don't know them, they're in Dr. Bob's nightmare. Number one, a sense of duty. Number two, this is my favorite, it is a pleasure. Number three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took the time to pass it on to me. And number four, because every time I do it, I take a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Thank you for allowing me to step up and be of service to you today.
And that's the reason I'm a compulsive eater. I never start speaking unless I have a moment of silence and let's do a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Again, I'm Laretha. I'm a compulsive eater. And notice now what I said. I didn't say I'm Laretha, and you should say that Laretha is the higher power, because there is a higher power, and his name is God, and he's certainly not Laretha, and I'm glad it's not. And the day that I become your higher power, then you better start really running. So, and I want to, before I even qualify, I want to read this right here from the big book. On page, it's on page 282, and this is in the third edition, but it's in the fourth edition too. It says, at the bottom of the page, the AA way of life is the way we always should have tried to live. And that's so true for me. The AA, or the CEA high way of life, is the way I always should have tried to live. I came into CEA High January the 5th, 1997. I relapsed January the 25th, 1997, and had to start over on January 26th, 1997. I stayed absent until I had to start over again June 6th, 2006. Now, that start over wasn't because of the first start over was because I had been in a certain store and I was walking down the aisles and they had things out there that, you know, that you're supposed to walk by and not pick up and taste. Well, for some reason or another, I reached and picked up one of those things, and immediately when I picked it up, I said, oh, my God, I ate that. I got to call that woman don't want to call her because I didn't want her to be my sponsor in the first place. But I got to call her. So I called her, and she says, oh, good, okay, you just have to start off. I said, no. I just had one of that. She says, you still have to start over. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I says, I can't do that. She said, well, you're starting over. I said, oh, God. I said, okay. When I got off the phone, I said, I'm not calling her anymore. The next day, I called her, and we started over. And so I stayed absent until June, and I had to start over June 6, 2006, because emotionally, I lost my abstinence. And she was telling me all the time, she said, Loretta, you haven't lost your food abstinence. You don't need to start over. I said, oh, yeah. I need to start over. I need to do the 30 days questions again. I said, because if I don't, I'm going to lose it all the way. I said, and spiritually, I'm just not there. So she said, okay, if you say so. So I did the 30 questions all over again, sitting in the meetings. Can you see me sitting in the meetings, being quiet and not saying anything? Hardest 30 days I ever done. The first one wasn't hard. But that one, those were, but I did it. And I've been absent since June 6, 2006. I call my food in every morning. I write my food down every night, no matter what's going on. I don't care what's happening in my life. I do that food. I write it down every night, and I call it in the next morning. I have a 46-pound weight release, and I tease another person in the program. I used to sponsor her, and we tease each other a lot all the time. And she says, so are you down to go weight? I said, no, go weight is 7 pounds, 8 ounces. That's what you weigh when you're born. She said, girl, she said, you're not going to. I said, you know, that's a compulsive mind. I said, I'm just as compulsive one way as I am the other. You never, no matter how much weight comes off, it's always, I could take off another pound. I could take off another pound. And I'm very vain. Oh, if you didn't know it. I'm very vain. And it's, most people say, I have a hard time looking at myself and thinking I look good. I said, I don't have a problem with that. Not at all. And she said, they said, what? And I had one person, and she was in the program, she dropped out. She called me one morning, and she said, Loretta, what are you doing? And it was early in the morning, and I was getting ready to go to work, and I was standing in the mirror and getting myself ready for work. I said, you don't really want to know. She says, yeah, I do want to know. I said, no, you don't want to know. She said, I do want to know. I said, I'm standing in the mirror looking at myself and seeing how good I look. And she said, oh, God, Loretta, go to work. So, that's just the way, that's Loretta. I have worked this program, and the stepping up in the program for me has been when I can go through anything in life abstinently, that's a stepping up in the program to me. I've had lots of hard things to me. It may not be hard to someone else, but it was hard for me. And I'm going to try to hold my composure and be really strong. August the 27th last year, one of my children just died. Just like that. Was gone. Doctors had checked him out and everything. He had good reports and everything. He'd gone for his physicals and all that stuff. He just died. December the 17th, 2014, my sponsor that I'd had since 2006 died. And I thought I was going to lose it. So the only thing I could do every day, I would get up, and I got a sponsor. The day she died, I got a sponsor that same day when I got that report from her daughter that she had passed away. I got a sponsor. And I would come in every day from those two. I was like, I don't think, God, that you want me to lose my absence over this. I mean, I just don't think so. So I'd come in every night. I'd drive into my garage, and I'd walk into the kitchen. On my counter, I always have my pad where I write my food down. I don't understand why that was so important to me, but that was the most important thing I could do every night. And it was just like a must. You know, I don't know. I can't explain it in a way. But I'd do that. I'd write it down, and the next morning I would call it in. It was just like I was just in rope, you know, just in doing things by emotion. Because both of these people, I was talking to God, and I said, God, my sponsor worked a hell of a good program. One time my sponsor was Du Bois Chair. And I just couldn't understand. The child that died, he had come into program. He was coming out of UT, getting ready to go get his master's. And between those two lines, he'd gotten into things that were not good for him. And he had gone into the program. And I was saying, God, he worked a hell of a good program. He loved his program. I said, and both these people just gone out of my life. And I sit here as I talk about that today. I know that there are a lot of you here in this room. You've lost people too. These are not easy things to go through, but going through it abstinently is the best thing. I can do anything abstinent. But if I go back out there and I lose abstinence, I'm not going to be with you or nobody else. In fact, I'll die inside because I won't have the program. And this is where it is. And I always say, I wrote this down, problem is not losing weight, it's living life. I mean, that's the whole point of it. Action is doing service. We're all high maintenance people. We have to go to meetings. We have to sponsor. We have to have sponsees. We have to have tools. We have to write our food down. We have to call it in. But it's better to be a food person than to use the tools than to be out of the program and not have anything to hang on to at all. And I'll close. I mean, 10 minutes is not enough. You know, I can talk forever. But I hang on to the program. And I wrote this down, and this is where I feel. And I really felt that last year when I was going through all of this, all of that hard emotional stuff for me. Today is the first day of program or abstinence for me. Every day is the first day. I don't get the days past, neither do I get the future. I have a higher power who lets me call him God. I get to call him God because he lets me. And when I say this, I'm finished. God gave me the gift of letting me every first day call him God. He gave me that gift. And I am so grateful that all of you are here. Love you all. And I say this too. I say this a lot. I don't have to like everybody, but I do love. But the only thing is about people in the program, I love all of you. And isn't that wonderful?
Let's thank the panel again for a wonderful job. We have a few minutes for you to ask any questions. If you want to ask a question, I just ask you to sign a release that when you come up here, because it is being recorded. So is there anyone that wants to ask a question to the panel?
Hi, I'm Suzanne. Okay, I'm a compulsive eater, very grateful. And one of the things that I work on every day, and I think that's where I fall down because I'm working on it, is my spiritual aspect of the program, because I never think I'm doing it right. So I was just wanting to know how you guys do that on in your program. That's what I would like to know.
I'm Jill T., and I start the day by saying the third step prayer. And I, through that prayer, take the first three steps. I have admitted that this is unmanageable by me, that I do believe there's a higher power that wants to restore me to sanity today, this very day. And then that I offer myself and surrender to that higher power. And then I do a little reading from one of our literatures. I spend some time thinking about it, which is to me meditation. I just sit there quietly and let it soak in. And then write a little bit about it. And through the day, I remind myself that I'm not alone, that I have others in this program and use those tools, and that I have my higher power. And when life starts getting me flustered, I use the serenity prayer. And when I end that serenity prayer, I ask for the next right thing to do. And it's kind of a simple formula, but it's just carried me forward. Thank you.
My name's Rod. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Rod.
We were just talking in line at lunch about this, and you know, I've done a great deal of spiritual work, and it's waxed and waned, you know, and I have to be mindful because it will do that at times. My 10th step will kind of fade away a little bit and then come back, or my meditation will be super strong and then it'll fade a little and then come back. And I have to be very mindful because I'm a very black or white person, and I'm also very good at beating myself up. I love it. And I can use my spirituality to beat myself up just like anything else. Never good enough at it. Never good enough. It's never enough. And I have to be very mindful of that. But at the same time, I'm grateful that I have this hunger for more humility. I want desperately to turn my will and my life over to my higher power many times a day, as our literature says, not just in the morning, but many times a day. So I have to be careful to balance this understanding that I'm not perfect, and I cannot expect perfection spiritually, but I can strive for that, as our literature says.
Megan Therese is still a compulsive eater. In the big book, it says on page 381, and it's still the third edition, the 12 steps, which to me are a spiritual way of living, soon meant honest thinking, not wishful thinking, open-mindedness, a willingness to try, and a faith to accept. They meant patience, tolerance, and humility, and above all, the belief that a power greater than myself could help. That power I choose to call God. That to me is a way of living a spiritual life. Using the 12 steps, they're there for me to use for a reason. And all through the day, sometimes I have to ask God to restore me to sanity. You know, that's part of me. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm perfect. My spiritual absence sometimes gets very shaky. You know, it got real shaky yesterday. Real shaky. And I was in the airport, and I'm like, oh, Lord, gosh, you got to help me. And it was all about the one thing with Loretta, you never mess with her food. You understand that? And today, even, you know, I had food on my plate. I left food on my plate today. Seldom. But I left food on my plate today. And I had a sponsor years ago. She would tell me, she said, Loretta, You're supposed to leave food on your plate for God. And I looked at it and I said, if God wait for me to leave food on his plate, he's going to starve. I leave no food on my plate. So, but yesterday in the airport, when the baggage was going through, they took food out of my luggage that I was bringing to eat for my dinner last night. I was livid. I mean, it's not like it cost a lot. It's the fact that they took my food. And I was walking and waiting, and the guy was saying, he said, well, I'm so sorry, Miss, and thank you. And I never looked back at him. I could not look at him. I'm like, no, I don't even want to look at you. You took my food. And so I was walking down, most people walking down, pulling their thing, was no problem thinking about where they're going to sit. I was walking down, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to get the food for that? That's me getting out of spiritual. So I got on the phone, and I called two people from the airport. This is in Dallas, at the airport, and said what was happening. And they talked me back, into a spiritual place, and I was able to move on. That's what the program does for me. That's what the program does. One was here at the convention, and I was like, I had to. So that's how I work to keep in fit spiritual condition.
Irish compulsive eater. I too have quiet time in the morning, and I am a kindergarten teacher. And all day long, I hear little children's voices. I can assure you, as long as there are teachers in school, there will always remain prayer in school. Always. But I have to start out with a certain amount of quiet time to lay the foundation of my day. So every day, I get up at dark o'clock. If you want to call me at 3:30 Central, you got me. I'll be there. But I need that to get some grounding for my day. That's just essential for me, and then throughout the day I continue on, as I said, with periods of prayer that help center me and call me back. And a lot of times I'm on my knees in the bathroom at school because of different children or different situations that occur. So I'm thankful that I have those resources and things to help ground me when I'm feeling a little less spiritual. Thank you.
I'm Pam, I'm a compulsive eater. I just was reminded by all of you. Yes. I'm reminded by all of you that this program is so much more than a weight loss program, that it's about recovery. And I'm the emotional one. I'm always the crier, but I've been in this program for over 16 years. Hasn't been a straight abstinence. There was a 5-year honeymoon period, and then there was the struggle. But I never left the rooms because I knew this was the answer. But the recovery, the weight loss has come. And it doesn't matter whether you have 5 pounds to lose or 300 pounds to lose, it is not about the weight loss. It is about the recovery. And it has been difficult for me to find that spiritual side. I have a very unusual thinking about my higher power. And it's not traditional, but I found it and it's working for me. And I think it's taken me some slips to understand the power of a higher power, because it was just difficult for me to maintain this program without it. And the tools are so important, and you've really pointed out to me by your recovery how important that is, and I just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you, Pam.
This has been really wonderful, but unfortunately, we need to give the crew a time to break up the room. So if you have any more questions or comments, please come up and see our panel. They'll stay for a couple minutes. And thanks for everyone for participating.